Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host tonight, Greg Burr, sitting in for V. Paul Reynolds, who is at Moose Camp. I heard, Norm, that he got a moose.
Well, that's the story I got from Catherine, okay. But I haven't had it confirmed by Paul, so.
Okay.
But it sounds good, because she hasn't gotten back to me and say, oops, I made a mistake.
Well, we hope that he did, and we're happy to give him a night off while he's cutting up his moose, so. But we're coming to you live from Blueberry Broadcasting Studio 7 in Bangor, Maine. And in the control booth tonight, we have that master of the airwaves, our technical guru and good friend, Norm Plord. Great to see you, Norm.
Good to see you, Greg. Been a while.
It has. I haven't done a show since, I think it's April.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks. And we have a very informative show for you all tonight. We'll be talking to Tim Obrey, the Moosehead Lake Area Regional Fisheries Biologist, who will be filling us in on that sector of the state's fisheries, including updates on Moosehead Lake and some of its inlets and outlets, and as well as information on Chesuncook Lake, Sebeck Lake, possibly Allegash Lake, and the Foxhole on below the West Branch of the Penobscot, just below Spumic. So pull up a chair with your favorite beverage and lend an ear. And as always, if you have a question or comment for our guests or our show, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. Our program tonight is brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal, the best outdoor newspaper in Maine. Please check out the journal's website at www.sportingjournal.com. And our show is brought to you by General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. We want to remind all of our listeners tonight that you can hear our show on 103.9 FM Bangor and 101.3 FM Augusta. You can also stream us live on the internet from anywhere in the world, or hear us on our Rewind podcast at WVOMFM.com. And see, now before we get to our guests, let's check in on our outdoor digest to see what's happening around the state. Cue the music, Norm. Maine's deer firearm season started yesterday with the residents only day, after having 2 days of youth only hunts on October 24th and 25th. And starting tomorrow, all hunters with a firearms license can participate in Maine's deer rifle season, which lasts until November 29th. Then muzzleloader season kicks in starting on December 1st and extends until the 13th. Some wildlife management districts are open for both weeks, while others are only open for just that first week. The general archery season ended Friday. And with a harvest count, when I checked the dash count on the department's website, it was at 8,227. That was as of Thursday when I wrote this up. So it may be a few more, but so that the season's underway, and for deer harvest, it has been since September 6th with the expanded archery. And the expanded archery season is still going on in designated zones and areas, and it will be until December 13th. The grouse season is open and extends till December 31st. And I've hunted in the Rangeley area this year, as well as up in the Moosehead Lake area. And we found birds each time. The first time up in Moosehead was really good. We had dog power. And once you get off the roads, because the birds hadn't come out to the road yet when I was up there, but they were off on those old skitter trails, and we did pretty well, both for woodcock and grouse. So we were surprised. We'd heard that the population was wasn't going to be as good this year because last year was exceptional. But this year was pretty darn good for us up there in the Moosehead Lake area. And then in the Rangeley area, we did pretty well as well. So it was good. The general bear season is underway for all hunters who have firearms license, and the season goes until November 29th, so right to the end of the open firearms season for deer. And the bear count so far is 3,576, which is quite good.
I was going to say, that's not bad.
It's not bad. Where, you know, things were dry this year, and I didn't think that there was a lot of natural food out there, and I heard that they weren't coming to the bait all that well, but they must have, between the trappers and the dog hunters and the baiters and stuff. They must have done quite well so far, so that's great. The moose season ended yesterday with a tentative count of around 2,095 animals. That was as of Thursday when I wrote this up, so that's pretty darn good. And most everybody that I talked to that had a moose license, a moose tag, they did well this year, so I was really pleased to hear that. Maine fall turkey season has 5 more days open, and it ends on Friday, November 7th. If you're still looking to shoot a turkey, check the bird limit for the zone you're hunting in, as some zones have bag limits of 5, others 3, others 2, and some just 1. So check the law book before you go. On the fishing front, many of Maine's lakes and ponds are still open for cold water fish. And you know, mostly artificial lures only and catch and release. And there's still many warm water lakes and ponds open, so you can get out there and catch some bass. And you can still harvest some of those fish as well. But there are still some rivers and streams open, generally for catch and release only. Tim, you have one in your region. It's that East Outlet, right?
Yeah, the East Outlet's actually very good this time of year. And the section that's open is from the dam down to what's known as the beach pool, which is about a mile of river. But it's very good salmon fishing.
Great, great. Any other places in the Moosehead Lake area that's open for, like, you know, rivers and streams?
The West Outlet is also open.
Okay.
And that's more of a, it's a smaller section there, but that can be very good. And then, of course, the usual stock ponds are open. But we don't really see much use there. The East Outlet gets a lot of use right now.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Well, let's take this opportunity to take a hard break and go for a commercial. So remember, when the other stations are rocking, we're talking about the Maine Outdoors. We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back with the Maine Outdoors radio show. And again, want to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question or a comment for our show, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. And now for our guest, Tim Obrey, the IFNW's regional fisheries biologist from the Moosehead Lake region. He's here to tell us all about things with going on with Moosehead. And Tim, I read the article in the paper in the BDN by Susan Bard, who does a great job, by the way. I love her stuff. And this was really informative, telling about how you guys are trap netting up on Moosehead and trap netting lake trout to do a population estimate. So what's going on up there?
Yeah, that's right. So this is actually the second year. Last year was sort of a trial run, but the goal, as Susan said in the article, is to do a population estimate. And it's a little bit tough. You can't just go out into a 75,000-acre lake and paddle around and count lake trout. So it's this work is done in the fall when the lake trout are coming in to spawn. They're coming to shoals that are exposed to the wind. And we've designed some special trap nets that will capture those fish. These nets are a little bit taller. They're meant to fish two in a gang of two, basically, and we set them off the shoal in about 8 feet of water, places that we know the fish are spawning. And then we're taking those fish and we're putting pit tags in the left cheek of each of the fish that's over 18 inches. Yep. And the idea is that when we're out there this winter checking fishermen, we're going to be looking for tag returns.
Right.
And that will give us a rough population estimate for lake trout.
Great. And those nets, you don't have any leads on those nets? Those are just,
they do have a lead. So a standard trap net, you have like a 100-foot lead that goes right to shore.
Right.
And then you have the box end that has a fike in it. And the fike is basically the same thing that you would see in a lobster trap.
Yep.
And the fish are bouncing off that lead and they come in through the fike and they can't get back out. Right. Well, when you're on a shoal, there's no shoreline to tie off on, so the fish can just go around your lead.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we've taken these trap nets, and a standard trap net is probably 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
These trap nets are 6 feet tall, and we have an 8 foot lead. And what we do is we tie a trap net on each end of the lead. So I call it the push me pull you.
Okay, gotcha.
So you've got two trap nets out there, and like I said, they're just you try to find a nice flat spot, because if the material, if the substrate is too uneven, the net doesn't sit flush and the fish can get underneath.
Yeah.
So you have to look around. You have to find the sweet spot.
Sure.
But, they've really worked well. So last year we did a spot in Sandy Bay, which is about 4 miles up the lake from our office.
Yeah.
And there was a shoal there that we had trap netted with a standard trap net back in 2008. And I think we took 9 lake trout. We knew they were spawning there. We took 9 lake trout and we saw eggs.
Yeah.
So we went back with these new trap nets and we took over 200.
Okay.
So that tells you.
It tells you.
Yeah.
And if those, and for people who don't know, a fike is a funnel, is the funnel, right?
Correct.
Yeah, with the hoop, the small hoop there in the middle. So, yeah. Okay, great. So you did this last year, Tim, and you got, I read in the article, you had around 200 fish.
Correct.
And so then you, when you were out doing your creel surveys last winter, you and your staff, and you found some of these fish that you had trap netted last fall, because these are live capture nets, just so everybody knows, folks. So you release them after you capture them, and you put the tags in them, and you found what last year?
So last year going in, we did some basic math. We had a rough idea of what we thought exploitation was, and this was based on some work that was done in the 70s when we were stocking. We actually were stocking lake trout, so we had some marked fish in the system. So we knew what the exploitation was then, and we kind of just gave our best professional judgment as to where we are now versus then.
Right.
And we came up with an estimate that we thought we would see one tagged fish for every 75 fish that we checked on the lake.
Right.
So normally we check around 150 lake trout over 18 inches in a winter time. And last year we had a little bit of extra money, so we had some extra staff.
Yeah.
And we bumped that up. We actually, I think we saw around 230 lake trout on the lake. And so based on the math, we figured we'd see 3.1 recaptures, and we got 3 recaptures.
Okay.
So maybe it was coincidence. I don't know. It came out right where we thought, which made us feel pretty good about where we were.
Yeah.
But so 3 recaptures, that's a really small sample.
Right.
Right. But we did see 230 lake trout on the lake, which was about 10% of our harvest estimate. So I felt pretty good about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we wanted to do is to increase the number of tag returns. And we might be able to see a few more fish on the lake this winter, but the whole idea is to increase the number of tagged fish in the lake.
Right.
So we got some money from the Natural Resource Education Center at Moosehead and from the Moosehead Lake Fisheries Coalition. And we bought we bought 4 more trap nets, which for a tune of about $28,000.
Yeah.
They're expensive.
Not cheap.
Yep. And so now we're sampling on Sandy Bay. We're sampling at the Moody Island, which is just up in Rockwood.
Yep.
And then we have a gang of nets up on Center Island at the north end of the lake, right up towards Sebumit.
Sure. Okay.
And so we're sitting at, I think we're at 260 some odd fish towards the end of the middle of last week.
Yep.
And we're probably going to pull our nets tomorrow because the wind is looking ferocious for the rest of the week.
Right.
And on Moosehead, if it's more than 10 miles an hour, you're sitting on the shore.
Yeah, gotcha.
So
been there.
Yeah. So, and it looks like 10 to 15 most of the week coming up. And we've got some other things going on. But I think we'll probably be close to 300 fish by the end of the day tomorrow.
Those pit tags, Tim. When you see those, you got pit tag readers. I'm assuming when your staff is out there, is it because we used to put them in the nape of the neck? You guys are putting them in the cheek. Is it pretty apparent when you see those fish that the tag is there?
No, anglers won't be able to see them at all.
Okay.
They're under the skin.
Right.
They're about, I'm going to say they're maybe 10 millimeters long. They're thin. They look like they're shaped like an aspirin.
Right.
Or Tylenol.
Yep.
And they're very tiny.
Yeah.
And so they're just under the skin at the front of the cheek.
Yep.
And so we run the scanner over every lake trout that we suspect could be marked. If it's over 18, we're going to run the scanner over it.
So what if anything, would you like the public to do if they catch a fish over 18 and they keep it? Do you want them to stop by the office, give you a call?
No, we don't want them to do anything out of the normal.
Okay.
So this is the whole scientific premise behind this is it's a random sample.
Random sample, okay.
So people just go out and do your thing, and if the fishery biologist comes by, he's going to check your fish.
Yep.
And maybe you'll have a tagged one, maybe you won't.
Okay. All right, good. So last year you guys got a population estimate just to start?
Correct.
Yep. What'd you get? What'd you find?
So, of course, these fish are all over 18 because lake trout really don't mature until they get to be about 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So we're focused on just those fish over 18. That's all we're pit tagging. And
right.
So based on our math from last year, I think we came up with around 13,600 fish over 18 in Moosehead Lake.
Okay.
And then what we do is we know, looking at the catch rates, that I think the catch rate for, well, we know the catch rate for lake trout over 18, and we have a catch rate for lake trout under 18.
Yep.
And we can just do a straight ratio proportion and say, okay, if the population of lake trout over 18 is 13.6 and the catch rate is this, and then we have the catch rate for fish under 14,
yep,
then the catch rate for those, then the population estimate for those fish is X.
Right.
And so we came up with basically a population estimate of around 25,000 lake trout over 14 inches in the lake.
Okay.
Which is right about where you might think it would be for a big lake.
Okay.
I think some of the smaller lakes, you might get up to 3 or 4 fish per acre.
Right.
But for Moosehead, I think under half a fish per acre for lake trout,
yep,
is probably where we want to be.
Okay. All right.
Because we have other fish that we have to consider. It's not
right.
just the lake trout
right.
fishery there. So.
And this is about understanding the population level and the dynamic between those other fish that you're managing for, like brook trout and salmon and all the forage.
Right.
Yeah.
Lake trout really drive the bus at Moosehead.
Yeah.
So you have to keep your thumb on them.
Right.
We don't want to wipe them out. Some people accuse us of trying to wipe them out. We're trying to thin them down
right.
when we had too many.
Yep.
And I think that the proof is in the pudding. Once we took out like 80 to 100,000 tog in 3 years, it was just like you unkinked the garden hose and the smelts came screaming back and the
yep.
salmon got bigger.
Right.
The tog got bigger. We saw better survival on our salmon.
Yep.
And then the brook trout, of course, just took off.
Right. Nice. Now, in this picture, Jeff Bagley, your assistant regional fisheries biologist, holding up a 31-inch laker that's a 13-pound fish. You know, what's the percentage of fish like that in the population, Tim? Any idea? You know, over 10 pounds? I mean, that's the threshold people go by for
yeah.
you know, big fish.
It's small. It's a small percentage at Moosehead. So yep. we've had two fish right at 13 or over 13, mm-hmm. between 13 and 14.
Yeah,
I think we had one on Thursday that was right around 10 pounds. But most of the fish at Moosehead, it's always been this way as long as I've
yep.
been there. And
yep.
if I look at the data, it's always been this way since the 50s.
Right.
There are a lot of 18 to 23 inch tog.
Okay.
And we don't see a lot of those mid-range fish, you know, between 5 and 10 pounds.
Yeah.
You just don't see many of them. And that's what we're finding in the trap netting. We don't see the small fish like we do in the wintertime.
Right.
Where you get a lot of 16,
right.
17-inch fish, but you get a lot of 18 to 23-inch fish.
Yep. Yep. What's holding that back? I mean, the size, I mean, is it genetics, do you think, mostly? Is it forage? Is it a combination of both?
I think it's forage.
Forage.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Moosehead has never been known for like really powerful smelt runs like
right.
some places. Like
yeah.
Scudic a few years ago had awesome smelt runs.
Right.
We just have never seen that at Moosehead. And plus you've got tog at a high density, you've got salmon, you got brook trout,
yep.
you've got cusk, all of these things feeding on smelts to
right.
some degree, and there's just not enough food to go around. So
sure.
the growth, I think growth for lake trout is fairly slow.
Yeah, that's what we found as well down in this region.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
We've always said Moosehead is the meat and potatoes for lake trout fishing. If you want to catch a trophy, you go somewhere else.
Somewhere else, right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, let's take a break right now because I want to get into some other things about Moosehead and things, not just lake trout. But so let's take a break right now, Norm, and take a break for a commercial, and we'll be right back after these messages. Okay, and we're back with the Maine Outdoors Radio Show. And again, if you have a question or a comment for our show, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. And tonight we have in the studio Tim Obrey, who's the regional fisheries biologist for the Moosehead Lake region. And we're talking everything Moosehead right now, Tim. How's things going with the brook trout up there? You mean put new regulations on a number of years ago, slot limits, to help facilitate more of those big trophy trout and things. How's it going?
It's actually going really well. I think we got ahead of that at the right time. The slot limit, 18 to 22 inch protective slot, really did a great job. And the closure in Lily Bay also was crucial. Those fish were going to get wiped out, I'm pretty sure, if we didn't act when we did. And we had tremendous support from the sportsmen. And the catch rates, this summer and last winter were just spectacular.
Great.
For those fish. I've got friends that catch, a 10 or a dozen fish over 4 pounds every winter.
Fantastic. Yeah. Good. And we have a caller. Caller, go ahead. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, my name's Tom. I'm calling from LaGrange.
Yeah, Tom. What's on your mind tonight?
I got a nice fishing question.
Yeah.
Why can't we fish the St. John Ponds and Baker Lake in the winter?
Okay, Tim.
Well, Fifth St. John is open. We did open that one up. The other ones were closed mainly because there wasn't much traffic up there. You couldn't get there unless you were from Canada in terms of Baker Lake. So we've kept that one closed, and we've had this discussion within the fishery division for a long time about promoting invasives and whether we want to do that or not. And so for the most part, we're trying not to have those fish get spread around. We did open up Fifth St. John a couple of years ago so people could go and travel up the 490 road and get there. But for now, I think those other waters are probably going to be closed. There's still a few trout in some of those other St. John ponds that we do want to protect until it's over, which won't be too much longer.
It's over as soon as one muskie gets in. It's over.
Well, I don't know about that. There are a couple of those upper ponds anyway that still have some trout in them, I do believe. But Baker Lake probably not.
I fished Fish St. John quite a bit. I've caught a number of muskies out of there.
Yeah.
And every one of them I cut open to see what's in them.
What are you finding, Tom?
Most of the time, you're finding nothing.
Yeah, there's not much left.
I did find a brook trout last spring. I did find a small brook trout in one of them.
Yeah.
I've probably cleaned 100 of them.
Wow.
And I've probably, found one.
Yeah.
What size muskie are you catching there, Tom?
They're all up to, I've caught them 30, 34, 35 inches is the biggest you're going to get.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do they average? What's the average size fish that you're catching there for muskies?
Well, they're all right there, anywheres from in the high 20s up to 34, 35 inches.
Okay, wow.
But I guess I want to, you say you don't want to promote muskie fishing. They're in the state. I go up to fish the Long Lake Derby. I go to Bull Lake and camp on the ice for 4 nights to fish that derby. And the biologists up there, they come around, they check our fish for the age, they do all that. And that little East Lake got them in there, and they opened that up to fishing.
Huh. Yep.
And that's on the border. There's no reason we can't fish Baker Lake for ice fishing.
Yep.
And the third St. John and fourth St. John is harder to get to in the summer.
Yeah.
So why not let us, we can go up by snowmobile in the winter, why not let us fish them?
Well, I think, like I said, I think maybe not fourth, but I think third and second, still some trout left in those places. Baker Lake, we have this debate a lot, and so far we've decided not to open it yet.
But the Canadians can't come over like they used to be able to.
Yeah, right.
You know, them are only working border crossing, so
yeah,
we don't have to worry about the Canadians.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, no, good discussion, Tom. Really appreciate your call tonight. You know, if that's something you want to see, you could probably propose it.
Right. So it's something somebody's got to get a petition going for, by the sounds of it.
You could. I don't think we would sponsor something like that from within the department right now. Hard to say, but if you put a petition together, you could force a public hearing on it. Yep.
Right.
That's how the process works.
I mean, you know, up on the St. John, the river there, I mean, that's what you fish for now.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. That is true, yeah.
And it's open right now, too, if you want to go up there and fish it.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I fished. Muskie fishing is one of my favorites, so.
Yeah, no, they get big. I can understand that, yeah. All right. Well, Tom, thank you very much for calling in, and it was a really good discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. We'll see ya. All right. Well, good. We got a caller. That was a good discussion. Not everybody's going to agree on that topic, and we'll see if they do send in a petition, see where the department falls on that in the future. Yeah. So
we've been back and forth on it. We've talked about it a number of years, you know, whether we should be opening these places. And right. I think right now we're just going to sit on that for a while.
Sure,
probably.
Sure. Well, it's good news about the brook trout and moosehead. You know, there's not a lot of places you can get that size of a brookie around. And things. I traveled to Labrador a year ago and caught some fish similar to what we're seeing in moosehead. So it's really exciting stuff. And people have said for years, oh, you know, we used to be able to go to the state of Maine and catch big brook trout like that, but exploitation from all the fishing had really cut that down. So you brought that back, Tim, and I think that's great. And there's many places that we can do that. If there's the potential to do it, it would be wonderful. So yeah. A success story for sure.
Thank you. Yeah.
How's the salmon going there?
Salmon are all right. They're kind of plugging along. We did our trap netting this fall. The growth looks average, which is okay. And the fishing was actually pretty good this summer for salmon. There was quite a bit of activity. And I think, you know, it's typical. You see fish between 14 and you might get a few 21, 22 inch fish. We don't really see any huge salmon, but
right.
There's a lot of quality fish there, a lot of 18 to 22 inch fish.
Yep. I'm hearing that more and more from people, and people fished the roach this fall. I didn't get up there and fish it, but I did last fall. But this fall, they're catching some beautiful salmon up there on the roach.
Yeah. We were really happy with what happened at the roach this year, because we'd been looking at about a 3 or 4 year decline in the brook trout catch at the roach. And we were starting to get a little bit worried about maybe what was happening in Spencer Bay, because there are so many more smallmouth in the bay now. And we were wondering if maybe survival was dropping off from those young trout coming out of the river.
Yeah.
But the catch rates last year and this year really picked back up.
Great.
And this year, the roach was one of the few places that we had water because of the drought.
Right.
And we didn't have a lot of water. It was not as much as we normally put down.
Yep.
But it turned out great. And the fishermen were really happy.
Right.
We had good fishing.
Yeah, because you guys have to balance the water levels at first roach with how much you let out, you know, for the water levels in the roach.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not much of a balancing act. It's you basically save every drop you can.
Okay.
We fill the lake because we own the dam.
Yep.
And we babysit that thing a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work for three guys. And,
yep.
You know, but so we close it down usually in late March, early April when the runoff comes.
Mm-hmm.
We fill the pond before the middle of May usually.
Right.
And then we just adjust based on the amount of rain we get. If we get a lot of rain, we have to let a little bit of water out in June and July. But usually by July, we've got that thing closed down to about 100 CFS.
Okay.
And we're just holding our breath, waiting to get to September with as much water as we can. And then we tell the camp owners, you know, you have the water from May through September 1st.
Right.
But then the water goes down the river.
Sure, sure.
And so this year we were a lot lower than what we normally are because of the drought.
Yeah.
But we were able to open the gates up. I think we were a week later than normal.
Yep.
Because what you don't want to do is you open the gates up too early, you run out of water right. the third week of September, you've got a river full of fish and fishermen,
yeah.
and there's
yeah.
no water. That's so right. that would be a catastrophe. So yep. we try to look at what we have in September and do the math and figure out, okay, we've got enough water to run 150 right. to 200 CFS through the end of the month.
Yep. I thought I'd read that you guys were opening it up on the 8th or 9th of September this year.
That's right. We usually, if it's a wet year, we'll open it up right around Labor Day.
Yep.
And then run it through the month. But right. this year, yeah, you're right. We were off by a little more than a week.
And you've got wild togue and first roach, right? So, you got to keep your water levels up there so they have enough water to spawn on their shoals.
They spawn on the shoreline there somewhere.
Okay.
So
right.
usually by the end of October, by the middle of October, the lake is usually empty.
Yep. Okay.
So, and that's where you want it. So then they spawn on low water.
Okay.
And then the lake will stay empty all winter long because we just keep the gates wide open.
Yep. Yep.
And then we fill it up in the spring.
Okay. All right. And that begs a question, dip back to moosehead and lake trout. You guys are trap netting a bunch of shoals, lake trout spawning shoals. Is there a lot more out there that you don't know where they are, you think, where they spawn?
Well, we do know where there are a lot of shoals where they spawn. We know a lot of the shoals they spawn on.
Okay.
Paul Johnson and Scott Roy did a lot of work in the 70s with nets and going around to all the different sites.
Yep.
And did some work. So we have a pretty good idea of where they're spawning now.
Yep.
We did some radio telemetry work back in 2008, and we found some fish that were hanging around the shoreline in some rocky shoreline places that made us suspect that they're probably spawning on the shore.
Okay.
And so there's just an unlimited amount of that habitat in moosehead.
Right. Okay.
But there are probably, we've probably got 8 or 10 shoals where we know those fish go.
Okay.
And that's what we're focused on this year with Sandy Bay. Actually, in Sandy Bay, there's a complex of shoals there. There's probably 5 or 6 shoals right in Sandy Bay, and they yep. are all utilized by togue.
Right. And those are all on windward shoals.
They yeah. love the wind.
They do.
And yeah.
yeah.
It's great when it's, they love it on a night like last night where
right.
it's like a 15-mile-an-hour wind,
yep.
either out of the north or the south, they're doing their thing.
They're doing their thing.
It's a little yeah. hard to work in a boat when it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find predators in there feeding on those eggs too, Tim?
We've got a lot of suckers this past week and yep. a few cusk.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We used to find eels, which you probably don't have a lot in Moosehead.
None.
I don't know if they're
no.
not okay. They don't make no. it that far. Yeah, we'd find eels right in there feeding on the eggs as well. And so we'd take them and we'd net them and cut them open and stuff. And sure enough, they were feeding on yeah. togue eggs and things.
I'm sure the suckers will get in that net because we're tending those nets every 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so there probably are females in there dropping eggs in the net.
Right.
And I'm sure that's just a calling card for the suckers.
Sure, sure.
They all are smiling when we take them out of the net. They look very happy.
Yeah, there's a lot of protein in those eggs for sure. Yeah. Well, we'll take a break here and just do a live commercial for General Appliance. It's located on Center Street in Brewer. Off-grid living made easy at General Appliance Services. Gas ranges, gas refrigerators and freezers, gas lights and compost toilets. Ride the wave, right, Norm?
Ride the wave.
Now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who has been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Still serving up first-class customer service. Come visit them at the new location, just 2 doors down. We say new, but it's been they've been there for, what, 3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just 2 doors down from where they used to be, but they're at 103 Center Street in Brewer. General Appliance, sales and service for all of your off-grid needs. And you can call them at 989-3714. They're open from Monday through Friday, 9 to 4 p.m. That's General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. Now, is there anything else you want to say about General Appliance, Norm, that I've missed here? I've got all kinds of information on all their gas appliances and whatnot. And, of course, this stuff is perfect for camps. the compost toilets and things. I've been at camps with them, and they work great. Of course, Sue and I, when we had our hunting camp, we bought a bunch of stuff from General Appliance. Sure. They were terrific.
Yeah, they're a great resource, too, for any questions you may have.
Yep.
You know, I think it might be Paul that even mentioned one time that he had an issue, and at the time it was Al who had the store. And
right.
He basically helped him over the phone.
Yep.
told him how to fix it. So they're an excellent resource. I mean, yeah. I've never heard anything bad.
The deal. Well, all of our hunters and fishermen have camps, you know, remote camps and things where they have gas lights and gas refrigerators. Boy, they want to call General Appliance and stuff because they know their stuff. So exactly. Call them at 989-3714 and talk to Gary Coleman. Okay. Tim, so... we talked about First Roach a little bit, and I know that it a few years ago had been open to ice fishing, and that sunsetted, and you had some concerns that, that some of those larger trophy togue in there were going to be harvested. How'd that work out with that whole thing?
We saw a lot of those big lake trout go down the road in just 2 years, and that's why we let it sunset and did not keep it open. We did some rough math figuring out what percentage of the fish in First Roach were really trophy size. So for those of you that don't know, this is a lake that was not open to ice fishing. It had a spring fishery where people would commonly catch some 8 to 12 pound togue right off the shore. And when we opened it up to ice fishing, that all kind of went away, and all those fish went down the highway after the first year.
Yeah.
And we did a creel survey there the second year, and then we saw just a handful of fish.
Right.
And so we tried it. It didn't really work out, and it was going to be more of a detriment than a benefit.
Right, right.
So it's closed now.
And that resulted from a petition from the public to open it up.
Correct.
So it was kind of experimental to see how it was going to go, and... Yeah.
Correct. There was some support from mixed support, I would say, from the camp owners. Some of the camp owners wanted it, some of them did not.
Yep.
I think the commission had struck a good compromise. He opened it for 2 years and just let us evaluate it.
Right.
And it didn't work out. I think the number of fish that went down the road was just impacting the summer fish.
Sure,
so
sure.
If you take them in the winter, you're not going to have them in the summer.
Right, right. So it's going to take a number of years for that to build back.
Those fish are like 10 to 20 years old.
Right.
And so it does. Once you take those big fish out, it takes a long time to replace them.
That's right. What about Chesuncook Lake? I know you had some issues up there with just too many wild salmon, and so you had, you know, just so many miles to feed, and they were just all a lot of them were stunting. Right. What's going on up there now, Tim?
So we've made some pretty good progress. So we have a no size or bag limit on the salmon under 16, and a one fish over 16.
Yep.
For the salmon. And we were making some pretty good progress, although I was a little disappointed last winter with the amount of use there. It went down again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny because I was traveling up there most weekends to check. And I'd get there, you know, around 10 o'clock and check some people. And usually by 4 o'clock, I'm just starting to head down. It's a long ride from home, and you don't want to be there after dark. And about 3 o'clock, all these people would start showing up. And they were cusk fishermen.
Okay.
There was a lot of cusk fishermen activity up there, and right off the boat launch, it's a great place to go. You can catch cusk and salmon and smelts and perch.
Nice.
And you can just walk off the boat launch and do it.
Okay.
So we're still encouraging people to go up there and take a limit of smaller salmon.
Good.
We have the Derby up there on Memorial Weekend. That's been a great success.
Good.
We see hundreds of fish come off.
Excellent.
That weekend, so it does help.
Good. Good, good. And so how big are these cusks that people are catching up there?
Well, they range in size, of course, down you get some small ones. But I saw one catch of the party had like 4 or 5 fish that I thought were in the 6 to 7 pound range.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there were some good ones.
Jeez, I may have to get up there and get in them some of that action. Yeah. I love cusks. They're great eating.
You got to be careful. Chesuncook is probably the nastiest lake in our region in the wintertime because of it's got like a 20-foot drawdown.
Yep.
So you've got a lot of exposed rock and shoals and stuff that you got to be really careful on.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fishing, if you want to just go up there and drive out to the boat launch, you can drive right there and just walk out and catch fish.
Nice.
It's not that hard.
That's great. Excellent. What about an update on Sebec Lake? What's going on there?
So Sebec is kind of just plodding along. We've got a lot of smaller salmon there. It's always been known for small salmon. It still produces a few good lake trout. I think the catch rates have slipped a little bit there with lake trout. We've actually got more wild lake trout there than we ever had in the past.
Right.
I remember when I first started work in the 80s, it was 100% hatchery lake trout down yep. there. And now it's probably 70-30 hatchery to
okay.
Wild to hatchery.
Oh, okay.
So about 30%
yep.
of the fish are now wild.
Right.
We actually took these trap nets 2 years ago. We took them down to one of the shoals down there and we caught some fish just to see what was going on down there. So
yeah.
we do have some spawning going on the shoals
okay.
on Sebec. So
good.
That's a good and a bad thing.
Yep. Yeah, you can't control the population as well.
You don't. Yeah, it's a little tougher to turn the spigot off if
right.
you've got wild fish.
Sure.
But, so that's that's where that's at. And
salmon are all wild there.
Salmon are all wild there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're generally just a little on the smaller side, Tim?
14 to 16. I see a few bigger ones. I caught one this year jigging. I was jigging for toga. I got one that was about 20 inches. I was pretty impressed with
that. Wow, yeah.
Until it buried the hook in my thumb. I wasn't so impressed.
That's not funny.
But then, there's a lot. So the salmon spawn up in Wilson Stream, and they have a tough time getting up because of the waterfalls.
Right.
So we see a real high rate of mortality on those fish once they reach sexual maturity, which is right around 14 to 15
yeah.
inches.
Okay.
So we don't get a lot of fish coming back that are able to, come back as 5 and 6 year old
gotcha.
Fish.
Okay. Interesting. Allegash Lake. I know you had an issue there a few years ago where the lake trout were looking a little thin. And I think you changed regulations, if I recall, and you put a call out to anglers to go and harvest some Lakers.
Right.
How's that going?
So we haven't been back up to evaluate it yet. But basically, Allegash was open just in the month of February. And what we've seen really statewide is there's a lot less fishing pressure now than there was back in the 70s, 80s,
right.
and
yeah.
early 90s.
Right.
So we took the February only regulation off. And it's just general law. You can go there January, February, March, and even into April if there's ice there.
Okay.
So, but we haven't been back to really check it out yet. It's lake trout. It takes a while for them to recover.
Right.
So, but.
And it's hard to get there in the wintertime. I mean, it's not easy. And you can't use mechanical devices.
Right. No powered equipment.
Right.
But you can snowmobile to the shore.
Right.
Then you walk out and you have to have a hand auger.
Right.
You can't use a battery auger or anything
right.
like that.
Okay.
So it is tough. But it's supposed to be a wilderness experience. It's something
right.
very unique
right.
in the state of
yeah,
Maine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of the Allegash Wilderness Waterway. I know when I went up there in the fall of 22 and helped your guys, we netted whitefish and brookies. They were looking great. So that fishery is still going pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Allegash, one of the few places that we have left in the region that have a good, strong population of whitefish.
Yep.
But Allegash and Chamberlain,
nice.
That system's pretty much intact.
Great, great. And we're going to talk about the foxhole fishery on the west branch of the Penobscot below Subumic. So what are you finding there?
So we had it was okay fishing there, but the drought had a big impact on most of our river fisheries. And so normally we work really well with Brookfield. We talk with them basically every week once we mm-hmm. get into the fall. And those guys have been great at giving us flows that we want for the fishermen.
Right.
This year was tough because we just didn't have the water. And so the foxhole fishery is all fed from Subumic Lake.
Right.
And the lake has a 17-foot drawdown restriction from DEP. So there was only a little bit of water left there. Even though you go to Subumic, you see there's plenty of water in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It was hands off for the fishermen. So it was really frustrating for the fishermen, because once you get below like 500 CFS, you can't travel over areas of that river because the water is just too low.
Yeah.
And so for the folks that don't know much about the foxhole, it's not like the Roach or the East Outlet. You put your canoe in at Lobster Lake and you go down river like I think it's actually like 8 miles or something. You go down river, and then you camp out and fish. And there's about halfway down through the good fishing area is Big Island.
Right.
And when the water is low, when it's below 500 CFS, it's really tough to get below Big Island.
Okay.
So this year, I'm guessing the fishing pressure was very light down there because we just didn't have the water.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I know that was always a historic fishery where people love to do that, especially in the fall.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a unique fishery because it's so remote, and you canoe down there, you motor down.
Yeah.
And I know that Bucky Owen, our former commissioner, he loved going down there, and I felt bad for him this year because he couldn't get there.
Couldn't get there.
And he's been going there for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, fantastic. I'd never experienced that fishery, but I remember when I did work in the Moosehead Lake region, Paul talked about that way back in the 80s.
It's very interesting. It's not, like I said, it's not like the Roach River where you wade out and you find a hole and you cast to it.
Yep.
The first few times I went down there, I went down with Scott, Roy, and Paul Johnson.
Yeah.
And we pulled up to a spot and anchored, and I'm looking around. I said, really? Well, this is where we're fishing?
Yeah.
Because there was like the grass and there was a little bit of current there and a few rocks, but it was very different.
Wow.
And you're just sitting in your canoe and casting to these areas.
Okay.
But it's great fishing when the fish are coming up from Chesuncook.
Yeah. Fantastic. Good deal. I experienced this year for the first time on my bucket list is to canoe the Allagash and fish the Allagash for trout. We did that in June. We had perfect water conditions. Not a lot of bugs either, which we were really surprised, but we caught all kinds of trout,
nice.
Up to 15 inches. I was telling Frank Frost, the regional fisheries biologist up there, I said, Frank, you're doing a great job. There was just lots of trout, and we didn't work real, real hard either, Tim, to catch fish. Either in the ponds or in the river sections, it was great coming down through there. So we just put in at Churchill Dam and went down through. We weren't even up above. So that was great fun. So
that's nice. That. That's a great trip. I haven't been down below Eagle.
Yeah.
But it's nice that area up there, once you get north of the Golden Road, it's still pretty much intact.
It is. Yeah, it was very remote. Had a great experience. Campsites were terrific. Rangers, very helpful. Saw a lot of moose, which was wonderful. And we got to paddle right up to moose. And so it was pretty cool. So,
nice.
Yeah. So Norm has given me the high sign that we're just about out of time. It went really quick, Tim. Really appreciate you being on the show again and with all this information out there for the public. And stuff. And I encourage folks have questions to give Tim and his staff a call about that region up there because they try to stay right on top of things. So, always a pleasure, Tim. And Norm, we got just a couple of seconds left.
About three.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks tonight for everybody to tuning in to the Maine Outdoors.